I wonder if you were to take a moment and look back, I wonder whether you could point to times when your life changed. I wonder whether you can see a pivot point, a point when things were never the same again. I guess you could argue that the time we are in currently, in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic, will become a pivot point in history. It'll become a time when historians and sociologists will look back and they will say, before coronavirus, it was like this. And after coronavirus, it is like this. It will become a pivot point. But I wonder if we can be more personal with that. I wonder if there are times and events in our lives that provide a dividing line for us. They create that before and that after moment. I wonder if you can look back and find pivot points in your life, and pivot points in the life of our time together as a church. Times when things changed. These two stories are of the disciples witnessing the transfiguration of Jesus and Elisha's last few days with Elijah mark pivot points. They're pivot points in the bigger story in Mark's gospel and in the story that the narrator of Kings is telling. But they're also pivot points in the lives personally of the characters. In Mark's gospel, the transfiguration comes pretty much halfway through the gospel. It comes immediately after the Jesus' question at Caesarea Philippi, where he says, "Who do people say that I am? Who do you say that I am?" And Peter, being Peter, blurts out, "You are the Messiah." And then Jesus begins to teach them that he has to go to Jerusalem, where he must die. He reiterates this again on the Mount of Transfiguration. And from this point on, Mark's gospel changes. It focuses much more on the journey to Jerusalem and Jesus' journey to his death. For Peter and John, James and John, this is also a pivot point because they see something of Jesus that they will never forget. They see something of the power of God manifest in Jesus that will totally transform their lives. And if they ever had any doubts, then they're changed in that moment of transfiguration. These two stories are pivot points, both in a big picture and in the individual lives of the people of God. And so I begin wondering, where are the pivot moments, those transforming moments, not just as us as individuals, but us as a church? Where have the turning points been? And when we have reached, or when we are approaching those turning points, those pivot points, I wonder how we react. I ask that question because both of these stories are full of nervous tension. In Mark's story, when Peter, James, and John go up to the mountainside and Jesus is transfigured, you know, Peter can't shut up. He just doesn't know what to say. He's got to keep talking. He's got to say, he wants to be busy as well. So let's build a few shelters. It's good for us to be here. He's so nervous. He can't shut up and he must keep busy. For Elisha, he's different. He becomes clingy. He can't let go. Knowing the time has come for Elijah to be taken up, Elijah says, "Well, I've got to go to Bethel." And Elisha says, "Well, that's okay. I'll come too." And Elijah says, "I've got to go to Jericho." And Elisha says, "Well, that's all right. I'll come too. I've got to go to Jordan." "Well, that's all right. I'll go too." Elisha becomes clingy. He won't let go. Not only that, he becomes snappy. Do you look at it? The prophets say, Elisha, you know it's time for Elijah to go. And he says, yes or no, shut up. Elisha, you know it's time for Elijah to go. Yes, shut up. There's nervous tension in these stories. And Peter talks too much and gets busy. Elisha becomes clingy and snappy. And I wonder what it is for you. I wonder what it is that gives it away that you're nervous. Do you become irritable? Do you talk too much? Do you speed up talking? Do you cling to what is familiar? Twitch your foot when sitting, curl your hair with your finger. Each one of us will have something that, if you know what you're looking for, it will reveal that we are nervous. These two stories of pivot points, of points of changing in life, are full of nervous tension. And it invites me to ask the question, how do we approach those significant points in our life? These two stories also show something else as well. They're pivotal points in the characters' lives. They're pivotal points in the stories that the narrators tell. They reveal nervous tension, but there's something else as well. Because when you put these stories side by side, which the lectionary encourages us to do, there's something about the significance of place here. I don't think it's any accident that the transfiguration takes place on the mountain, on a mountainside. In Genesis 22, it's on the mountain that Abraham takes his son Isaac to sacrifice him, and the Lord steps in just at the last minute. It's in Exodus 20 that Moses goes up onto the mountain to meet with God and receives the commandments and the law. In 1 Kings 19:16, it's on the mountain that an exhausted Elijah is commissioned by God to anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, as king over Israel, and Elisha, son of Shaphat, Elisha that we're meeting, to succeed him as prophet. In Mark 9, Peter and James and John are on the mountain at the time of transfiguration. And in Matthew 28, on the mountain, it's on the mountain that the risen Jesus commissions his followers to go and make disciples. And so when it comes to those key pivotal points in our lives, those lives when God steps in and changes our direction, there's something about the significance of where he does it. Now, there's a sense where, as a worshiping community, we usually do that, or used to do that, in our building. But for us as individuals, that might not be the case. For each of us will be different. Some of us will find God touches us very specially in a church building. For others, it will be in some place with a view, something of the beauty of creation, the ambiance of a place, something that helps us tune in to where God is and just begin to sense what he is doing. The place of meeting will be significant for each of us. And it begs the question, where is that place of meeting? Where is the place that you travel to, that you retreat to, that God calls you to when he wants to bring about a significant change, a pivot point? Put these two stories side by side, and in the lives of the main characters, we find a place of significance. But there's something else here. There's a question of response. How do we respond to that encounter? I wonder how we respond when we have met with God and are convinced that he is calling us in a different direction. How do we respond when he calls us to take on a new task, a new responsibility? For Peter, James, and John, they seem to respond quite well, having been told by Jesus not to tell anyone what they've seen. They go down the mountain talking about what Jesus means about being risen from the dead. They seem quite happy holding the transformation of Jesus just in abeyance and discuss something else. For Elisha, it's a different matter. He doesn't have such an easy response. First of all, he tears his clothes in response to Elijah's departure, a traditional expression of mourning. And there's almost despondency in Elijah's response, almost a reluctance to move on. You can almost feel the sense of despondency when we see that he picks up Elijah's cloak. The cloak that Elijah had placed on his shoulders when he had called him and commissioned him in 1 Kings 19:19. He picks up the cloak and he strikes the River Jordan. And he says, okay, where is the God of Elijah now? Not where is my God now, where is the God of Elijah? Well, if he wanted an answer, there it is. Because as soon as he strikes the waters, they part. Just as the waters had parted for Joshua when the people carrying the ark had stepped into the Jordan in full flood. Just as the waters had parted for Moses when he raised his staff over them, over the Red Sea, and they had escaped the onrush of the Egyptian army. If Elisha needed confirmation that the Lord was now with him, there was no more confirmation needed. And I wonder, it calls me to ask, how do we respond to those pivot points? When the Lord is calling us onward in perhaps a different direction, do we get despondent about it? Do we cling to the past? Do we shrug our shoulders and wonder what next? Or do we embrace the fact that the Lord is speaking, that he has shown us something special, that he has commissioned us to be involved in something that he is doing? There's one other thing here, one final thing here in this passage as well, because it's not just Peter, James, and it's not just Peter who sees something of God. It's Peter, James, and John. It's not just Elijah who is commissioned and is filled with God's Spirit. There is an affirmation of others. When the Lord calls us to a change point in our lives, a change point together in our lives as a church, I would dare to suggest that it is something that is affirmed by others, not just something we come up with on our own. In Elisha, the affirmation of others is evident. The company of prophets has been irritating Elisha all through this story. Come to one another and say, the spirit of Elijah is on Elisha. And they go and they bow before him and they acknowledge what has happened. In Mark's gospel, it's a little less evident. However, it does seem significant that Jesus takes more than one person onto the mountain. He takes three, Peter, James, and John. And this principle of witness runs like a theme through the scriptures. In Numbers 35 and Deuteronomy 17, a judge cannot pass a death sentence simply on the basis of a single witness. There have to be other witnesses. In Joshua 24, Joshua reminds the people that they are witness that he has committed himself to walk in the ways of the Lord. In Ruth 4, Boaz announces to the elders that they are witnesses that the business transaction that he has with Naomi has taken place and is legally binding, and that he has decided to take Ruth as his wife. In Isaiah 8, Isaiah calls on Uriah, the priest, and Zechariah, the son of Jebukiah, as reliable witnesses that he had carried out the actions of the Lord had required of him. This concept of witness, this corporate affiliation, goes to the heart of God himself. Where in Genesis 1:26, as they come to creation and they come to form humanity, God says, let us make humanity in our own image. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, one God in perfect Trinity, saying, let us make humans in our image. The God we worship is a collaborative God. And whenever it comes to a pivot point, a transition point, a before and an after moment, whenever we are given a new task to fulfill, a new calling, a new direction to travel, there will be others who will affirm that God is speaking. Which leaves me wondering. Leaves me wondering, when we look back at the pivot points in our lives as individuals and our lives together as a church, who were the witnesses who confirmed that what we were doing was of God, affirmed in us that the direction we took was of him, affirmed that the task we were undertaking was his task bestowed upon us? On first looking, these two stories are quite different. And yet, when you put them together side by side, you start to see some similarities. There's a nervous tension that comes with approaching a pivotal point in the lives of the individuals and in the story that the narrators are seeking to engage us with. There's a nervous tension that we see in Peter's incessant talking and wanting to be busy, and Elisha's clinginess and his snappiness. There's a significance of place, the place where God meets us, calls on us to change direction. There's a question of response. How do we respond to those pivotal moments that the Lord leads us to and leads us through? And there's an affirmation of others. There are those who bear witness to the calling, bear witness to the task, bear witness to the direction. And it leaves me wondering, when we look back on our lives, how will we approach the previous pivot points in our lives and in our history as a church? What will we learn from those experiences? From the way God met with us, from the way we engaged with him, what will we take into the future? So that as we engage with the Lord and as he seeks to lead us to new defining points, we will engage with him in a way that is significant and brings honor and glory to him. I wonder what we can learn from the scriptures about pivot points and those times of transition, and how that might affect how we go forward together as a people. I wonder. Amen.